The talking robot was a tour de force, a thoroughly impractical device possessing publicity value only. Once an hour, an escorted group stood before it and asked questions of the robot engineer in charge in careful whispers. Those the engineer decided were suitable for the robot circuits were transmitted to the talking robot. It was rather dull. It may be nice to know that the square of 14 is 196, that the temperature at the moment is 72 degrees Fahrenheit and the air pressure 30.02 inches of mercury, that the atomic weight of sodium is 23, but one doesn't really need a robot for that. One especially does not need an unwieldy, totally immobile mass of wires and coils spreading over 25 square yards. Few people bothered to return for a second helping, but one girl in her middle teens sat quietly on a bench waiting for a third. She was the only one in the room when Gloria entered. Gloria did not look at her. To her at the moment, another human being was but an inconsiderable item. She saved her attention for this large thing with the wheels. For a moment, she hesitated in dismay. It didn't look like any robot she had ever seen. Cautiously and doubtfully, she raised her treble voice. "Please, Mr. Robot, sir, are you the talking robot, sir?" She wasn't sure, but it seemed to her that a robot that actually talked was worth a great deal of politeness. The girl in her mid-teens allowed a look of intense concentration to cross her thin, plain face. She whipped out a small notebook and began writing in rapid pothooks. There was an oily whir of gears, and a mechanically timbred voice boomed out in words that lacked accent and intonation, "I am the robot that talks." Gloria stared at it ruefully. It did talk, but the sound came from inside somewheres. There was no face to talk to. She said, "Can you help me, Mr. Robot, sir?" The talking robot was designed to answer questions, and only such questions as it could answer had ever been put to it. It was quite confident of its ability, therefore. "I can help you."
"Thank you, Mr. Robot, sir. Have you seen Robbie?"
"Who is Robbie?"
"He's a robot, Mr. Robot, sir." She stretched to tiptoes. "He's about so high, Mr. Robot, sir, only higher, and he's very nice. He's got a head, you know. I mean, you haven't, but he has, Mr. Robot, sir."
The talking robot had been left behind. "A robot?"
"Yes, Mr. Robot, sir. A robot just like you, except he can't talk, of course, and looks like a real person."
"A robot like me?"
"Yes, Mr. Robot, sir."
To which the talking robot's only response was an erratic splutter and an occasional incoherent sound. The radical generalization offered it, that is, its existence, not as a particular object, but as a member of a general group, was too much for it. Loyally, it tried to encompass the concept, and half a dozen coils burnt out. Little warning signals were buzzing. The girl in her mid-teens left at that point. She had enough for her Physics 1 paper on practical aspects of robotics. This paper was Susan Calvin's first of many on the subject. Gloria stood waiting with carefully concealed impatience for the machine's answer when she heard the cry behind her of, "There she is," and recognized that cry as her mother's.
"What are you doing here, you bad girl?" cried Mrs. Weston, anxiety dissolving at once into anger. "Do you know you frightened your mama and daddy almost to death? Why did you run away?"
The robot engineer had also dashed in, tearing his hair and demanding who of the gathering crowd had tampered with the machine.
"Can't anybody read signs?" he yelled. "You're not allowed in here without an attendant."
Gloria raised her grieved voice over the din.
"I only came to see the talking robot, Mama. I thought he might know where Robbie was because they're both robots."
And then, as the thought of Robbie was suddenly brought forcefully home to her, she burst into a sudden storm of tears.
And I got to find Robbie, Mama. I got to. Mrs. Weston strangled a cry and said, Oh, good heavens. Come home, George. This is more than I can stand.
That evening, George Weston left for several hours, and the next morning he approached his wife with something that looked suspiciously like smug complacence.
I've got an idea, Grace.
About what? Was the gloomy, uninterested query.
About Gloria?
You're not going to suggest buying back that robot?
No, of course not.
Then go ahead.
I might as well listen to you. Nothing I've done seems to have done any good.
All right. Here's what I've been thinking.
The whole trouble with Gloria is that she thinks of Robbie as a person and not as a machine. Naturally, she can't forget him. Now, if we manage to convince her that Robbie was nothing more than a mess of steel and copper in the form of sheets and wires with electricity, its juice of life, how long would her longings last? It's the psychological attack, if you see my point.
How do you plan to do it?
Simple. Where do you suppose I went last night? I persuaded Robertson of U.S. Robots and Mechanical Men Incorporated to arrange for a complete tour of his premises tomorrow. The three of us will go, and by the time we're through, Gloria will have it drilled into her that a robot is not alive.
Mrs. Weston's eyes widened gradually, and something glinted in her eyes that was quite like sudden admiration.
Why, George, that's a good idea.
And George Weston's vest buttons strained.
Only kind I have, he said.